Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, just yesterday we were learning the potential lessons of the Greek debt, the EU bailout, and how close we are to being in a position where our fiscal calamity will be even much worse, given how exponentially bigger our economy is. The good martini today is a lesson potentially from Britain, since we haven't necessarily gone down this road yet. But if the president gets his way, we probably would. The Brits have imposed for their top wage earners what's known as a 50 pence tax rate, which is essentially a 50% tax rate. And apparently the wealthiest Britons pay their taxes on a self-assessment basis in January. So all the folks over at the Exchequer were expecting this huge influx of revenues. Well, surprise, surprise, they got £10.35 billion, which is actually about half a billion pounds less than what they got last year. Now everybody over there, of course, scratching their heads. And it turns out that a lot of people who fit into that tax bracket are maneuvering to either move their businesses out of England entirely or to play as much as they can with the tax code as it currently exists to avoid paying such an exorbitant rate. And with the president wanting to invoke the Buffett rule, reports today that he wants to basically crank up the dividend tax to about 45%. This news couldn't come at a better time.
It's worth noting that if you tax something, you get less of it. This has been proven time and time again. Maryland, not too far from where I'm sitting, instituted a millionaire's tax. Like most millionaire's tax, it kicked in well below $1 million a year in income. Lo and behold, within a year, like one-third of the state's millionaires were no longer there. Now, some of our friends on the left insisted, oh, it was just because they had lower earnings, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems strange to see one-third of the state's millionaires disappear. It's kind of like there's alien abductions going on, but they're only targeting the highest earners. It's very mysterious about that. So people will believe in all kinds of other factors, and they never, ever seem to believe that, wait a second, if you – look, taxes, whether the liberals like to think of it or this way or not, are a form of punishment. The government is taking something away from you that most people, strangely enough, always believe that they have earned. Now, you might think that Snooki or The Situation or Kim Kardashian or anyone has not necessarily earned their money, but strangely enough, everyone does earn their money. And as we've seen from the Tim Geithners and Charlie Rangels of the world, no one likes paying any more taxes than they have to. So if they have to go through the desperate move of leaving the country or moving their earnings out of the country or moving their money out of a country or jurisdiction, they will do that. The perception of our friends on the left is always that, oh, we'll just raise taxes, the money will come in, and no human behavior will change at all. Well, gee whiz, you know, the people do change their behavior in response to the tax code. This is what accountants are there for. This is a, you know, people, you know, particularly the wealthiest Americans spend oodles and oodles of money to study the tax code, or specifically to hire people who study the tax code in order to minimize their taxes in perfectly legal forms. A better way of doing this might be to say, let's look at the other side and say, look, let's look at our expenditures. Let's look at what we really need and what we don't need. And let's try to keep taxes as low as possible so that most people will pay them and less time will be spent examining the tax code and more in doing actual productive and happy things with our lives instead of sweating over pages and pages of forms every April, or in the case of the United Kingdom, January.
And watch out, because you're going to hear a lot about the president wanting to drop the corporate tax rate to 28%, which in and of itself would be a step obviously in the right direction, but he wants to attach it to jacking up taxes on corporate profits overseas, closing certain loopholes, and going after things like dividend taxes eventually too. So beware the details, folks. Beware the details. Speaking of beware, let's move on to a martini number two now. And Rick Santorum is taking heat from a lot of different sources right now. The Drudge Report seems to be leading the charge, but it's certainly multifaceted because of these comments that he made back in 2008 during a speech at Ave Maria University in Naples, Florida.
This is not a political war at all. This is not a cultural war at all. This is a spiritual war. And the father of lies has his sights on what you would think the father of lies, Satan, would have his sights on. A good, decent, powerful, influential country, the United States of America. If you were Satan, who would you attack in this day and age? There is no one else to go after.
So, Jim, it's worth pointing out that, again, this is 2008, during a presidential campaign that he was not part of, and he's not the one who introduced this. The media found this, and now it's all over the place. But it probably doesn't work to his advantage in the political narrative when he's already kind of gone into areas that a lot of people find squeamish in terms of moving away from the religious freedom argument and talking about birth control itself. Over the weekend, what a lot of people would probably point out was taken out of context by the media about radical environmentalism being a phony religion. Still, it came across through many reports that he was considering the president to have a phony religion. And so with obviously the economy being front and center and a number of other issues, people think that this is once again going off the rails. Be interesting to see how this plays tonight in the debate and beyond.
Yeah, I discussed this in the Morning Jolt, and there were quite a few readers who were not happy with me contending this is being taken out of context. In context, it makes perfect sense. And oh, by the way, it was 4 years ago, so why are we making a big deal out of this? Well, let's not pretend that this won't be an issue in the general election if Rick Santorum is the nominee. You know, I'm no theologian. I really am in no position to assess the role of the devil or the existence of the devil or anything like that. Two points about this worth noting. One is that Americans are not used to hearing their presidents talk about this. Many presidents have talked about the existence of evil in the world and the evil that men do, be in the form of criminals, be in the form of terrorism, be in the form of brutal dictators. Now, I don't think that's really a controversial point. Whether that comes from a supernatural source or simply the human temptation to do the wrong thing and to hurt others, you know, perhaps for some it's a distinction without a difference. Certainly, I think at the presidential level, I don't think the motive, whether it's coming from some supernatural otherworldly source or whether it's coming from just the human capacity for greed and malevolence, I'm not really sure how much that matters. The bigger question is, if you really believe that your country is being targeted by Satan himself, why would you not pursue all of your goals with all the extent of your power? The idea that Rick Santorum would not pursue every single avenue to pursue his agenda, if you really see things in the context of being from the source of all goodness, God or Jesus, or coming from the source of all evil, Satan, boy, it's kind of hard to make a compromise, isn't it, Greg? We're only going to be 70% on the side of God. We're going to accept a 30% deal with Satan. You know, that's it's a very black and white way of looking at things. And as my readers have made clear, many people completely agree with Rick Santorum. I think it is safe to say this will be a little bit of a difficult sell in the general election. As I pointed out on Twitter a few moments ago, Santorum's belief in Satan has been deemed weird by the mainstream media. Congresswoman Maxine Waters of California, a Democrat, last week declared John Boehner and Eric Cantor are demons. So that's – and that, you know, largely elicited yawns. So on the one hand, you can grade on a curve and say, look, Maxine Waters says insane things all the time. On the other hand, you'd like to think that a member of Congress calling the Speaker of House a demon as if it were something out of Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something like that. No, by the way – calling one of the few Jewish Republicans in the House a demon. Did she check Cantor for horns? You know, does anyone detect any other unsettling anti-Semitic context to these remarks? But none of this gets, you know, elicits anything more than a yawn from mainstream media. But Rick Santorum saying this is, you know, a big deal. Having said that, no one could really doubt that Ronald Reagan had exceptionally strong religious beliefs and a belief that God was looking down on America and watching over us. I don't recall Reagan ever, and he just had no problem using, you know, moral absolutes, describing the Soviet Union as an evil empire. I think that the existence of the devil is a much more theologically contested point, and probably most Americans are not used to hearing a potential president talk like this. Does this mean he shouldn't talk about it? I think it's going to be in the eye of the beholder, but I think it is. I just happen to notice, like, gas is above $4 a gallon in three states, Greg, and I just kind of think that'd be a useful topic to talk about every now and then.
I think I can understand why a lot of your readers had the reaction that they did. I think, again, this is 4 years ago, so it's not Santorum injecting this into the campaign now. But I think a lot of people would suggest that there's a moral and spiritual and values-based decline in this country. If it were articulated in that way rather than the way it was, perhaps they'd be more agreeable to it, and maybe they'll be agreeable to it anyway, because if you look at polls, most people do believe in the existence of Satan, but I don't know that a lot of people are looking for theological lessons coming from their presidential candidates. We'll see what happens down the road. But
this may be a four-year-old comment, but I find it very hard. It'd be interesting to see if Santorum believes his view has changed on this at all in the intervening 4 years. My guess is it probably hasn't.
Oh, it probably hasn't. I think you're absolutely.
And so as a result, I you know, it would be relevant. You know, do you see Barack Obama, running in 2008, had the audacity to claim that his real opponent in the race was not John McCain or Hillary Clinton, but cynicism itself, which some people saw as a little bit of an arrogant and haughty and you know, seeing himself as a literal embodiment of hope, etc. In this context, it'd be very interesting to ask Rick Santorum, if, you know, it perhaps would be a fair question to ask, does he believe that his real opponent in this race is Satan? And I'm not being sarcastic when I say that. If he really does believe that the preeminent threat to America is not some misguided progressive agenda, but, you know, the metaphysical evil itself. Fascinating questions. Again, a little far afield from where I think the concerns of most voters are right now.
Fascinating question, and certainly not out of the range of possibility to be asked by John King, who is tonight's moderator, and in some ways the source of martini number three tonight, because this is his first time moderating debates in South Carolina, where he opened with this gem.
As you know, your ex-wife gave an interview to ABC News and another interview with the Washington Post, and this story has now gone viral on the internet. In it, she says that you came to her in 1999, at a time when you were having an affair. She says you asked her, sir, to enter into an open marriage. Would you like to take some time to respond to that?
No, but I will.
And, of course, that launched Newt to a victory in South Carolina and a brief run as front runner in the race. And we'll see if he gets back to that status. But, Jim, with John King back in the forefront tonight, what type of opening question are you looking at? Jeremy Lin, what do you think is going to be the main topic tonight?
My guess will be, for the entire field, does Obama's religion permit the use of contraception in an open marriage with Satan? kind of hit all of the special recent bizarre topics of my mind. We will see what happens tonight. The editors have an editorial on National Review calling it the debate mistake, that for the next cycle, we need a more structured system for these kinds of debates. You know, we don't need 20-some. There have been way too many cases of the mainstream media moderators have kind of joyfully led Republicans into these obscure topics and such. You almost know that we're going to get something on contraception tonight. You know we're going to get something on Satan tonight. You know we're going to get something on probably the use of super PACs and whether they should be allowed. It'll be fascinating to see whether, one, what's left to be talked about at this stage of the debate. Secondly, what cul-de-sacs they end up getting pulled down. I mean, it's one of those things where maybe I'm very different from most, you know, Republican primary voters out there, but I would be talking about the economy, gas prices, home heating oil prices, the housing market and foreclosures, all of the kitchen table issues I can get my hands on, and maybe Iran, the idea of an Israeli strike on Iran. Those seem like to be pretty big issues right now. Inevitably, we'll probably get something on should Virginia pass an ultrasound law for those women contemplating an abortion. You know, it's spending an enormous amount of time on social issues, and I think that's exactly what the mainstream media wants, and I think it will be ultimately detrimental to the GOP nominee. After 20-some debates, we have absolutely no reason for high, happy expectations. And John King, you know, after having the first question of the last debate be about open marriages, you know, insert your own off-color punchline here. I'll keep it a family podcast, but you just know this is going to be trouble here.
Jim, we'll find out. See you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.